The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today. She's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever. She's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. It does feel like we run into these social dilemmas all the time when we are out and about. I told you guys I was at the gym this weekend getting a little run in. Lady four treadmills down. It's basically just her and me and a couple of dudes lifting in the back. She's having a full-blown conversation on speakerphone on the treadmill. And I can hear her side of the conversation and the other person's side of the conversation. And then at some point she switched over to FaceTime, which, not that that's worse or better, it just was another layer of, oh, you're still totally unaware that this is not your home, this is not your basement, having a conversation. Got me real upset. Chewy was out and about.
Wait. So she doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt?
What do you mean?
Well, you were giving benefit of the doubt to
the... What's the benefit of the doubt talking in speakerphone?
Well, I mean, maybe she lost her earbuds and these were important conversations that needed to happen.
They weren't. I heard the whole thing. It wasn't important. Yes, if it was, we are deciding whether or not to take dad off hospice care. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. By all means, have the conversation.
Get off the treadmill
I get it.
For that one. Yeah.
So yes, no, it wasn't like that. It was like, and then he asked me out and I just don't know if I'm interested. It was that whole thing. It was like that whole thing. So anyway, Chewy's out and about, and he ran into a social dilemma the other day. And Chewy, what happened?
Well, I get it every now and then. People, I'm at an establishment, and like, hey, Super Bowl 31, awesome. Can I buy you a drink? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I say yes. I don't do shots. A lot of people, hey, come on, let me do a shot. I appreciate it. I'm very nice about it. And it's not a money thing. It's just... In that instance, if someone came to you and said, Gabe, love you from the show, let me buy you a drink, mm-hmm. are you obligated to buy them a drink back?
Obligated, I would say no, but I think it's the right thing to do. You know, if they're going to be hanging out
Is it okay to turn it down?
Turn down the drink?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, but...
Yeah,
no.
Like, hey, I appreciate the offer, but we're just about to bounce out of here. Don't have enough time to have a drink, but thank you so much. I appreciate it. There's a way to kindly turn down the offer for a drink, especially if it's a shot and you don't want to be shooting, you know, real whiskey or whatever they're going to be offering you.
Wait, so you always buy them a drink back?
Well, not always, but if you're going to be hanging out. So I was up at the Island Resort and Casino a couple years ago, hanging out. We were playing golf. We had four of us up there. Two guys were gambling. Me and my other buddy are just sitting at the bar. Somebody recognized my voice and he's able to, you know, he comes over. Oh, hey, are you Gabe Knight? Yeah. And so he buys me a drink and he was there with a bunch of buddies too.
Yeah.
So we were hanging out at the bar for a while. So after a while, like I finished my drink. I'm like, oh, I'm getting another one and I'll get one for that guy too. Cause he came up, he was super nice. And you want to say, hey, thanks for listening to the show.
See, I could turn it into a good scam for myself. Because I drink wine, and wine is typically more expensive, right? So if the guy's drinking a beer, which is how much? I don't even know how much a beer is.
$5-6
$5-6 A glass of wine can be 12. So if I'm like, Gabe, let me buy you a drink. What are you having a beer? Okay, get you a beer. And then you're obligated, you feel. You got to buy me a $12 glass
of
wine.
Wait, that's the thing. Do they always buy you what you're drinking?
Not always. A lot of times it's shots. And I'm like, thank you, but I don't do shots.
Right. I don't think that many people are going, what are you drinking when you have a glass of wine there? I think most people recognize that that's going to be a more expensive commitment than there's a bucket of beers, you know, for $12 or whatever, and I can give you one of those. You know? I don't think you're obligated to buy them back.
Bring it back to... your college years, and a guy's trying to hit on you and says, can I buy you a drink? Are you obligated to buy him one back? I would say no.
No, not in that situation. I would say no, Jen would not be obligated to buy one back.
What do you think?
It's very rare that I am buying someone alcohol. I'm just not going, if somebody says, hey, let me buy you a drink, love the show,
college
or
game
whatever,
day, huge blah, blah,
fan,
blah,
blah,
yes.
That's you. They have committed to that. I do not need to then return the favor. I don't watch them on television. I'm not appreciative. Like, it's not, there's not like that quid pro quo. They wanted to buy me the drink. Maybe I'll drink it. Maybe I won't. But I don't feel obligated to buy them one back.
Can we pull that, Joshy?
It's the nice thing to do, though. So, hey, I appreciate you being a fan. Have a drink on me.
Yeah. What I'm struggling with is there is some sort of notoriety where it's different for, and even me, people have recognized me and bought me a drink. And sometimes it's the person comes up and says, like, love the show and walks away and you have no idea where they go. Sometimes they have a nice conversation. If it goes for a conversation, I typically would buy back. But if someone drops me off a high life and says, like, great job on the show, I'm kind of like caught off guard. And I'm like, am I going to go seek this person out now and then figure out what they're drinking?
Like the pizza. You're on a mission. Where did they go?
Because like if someone totally random in a bar, which I'm mostly not recognized, and buys me a drink, I'm typically going to buy them a drink back if they're just like, "What? Grab that guy one too."
But I don't think they're I don't think they think you're obligated to buy them a drink.
No, I don't.
No, you're not obligated.
No,
I think it's the right thing to do because, again, you want to, you know, hey, show appreciation to your fan base.
Where's the fine line between it's the right thing to do and you're obligated? I mean, that feels like a small window.
Well, I mean, again, not everybody always does the right thing.
Pizza oven thief.
I also don't think if somebody comes up to you who recognizes you and buys you a drink, I don't think there is any expectation for that
Correct.
To be returned. I think it's a nice thing, but I don't think anyone goes, well, now Jen's going to buy me a drink because I bought her a Celsius.
That's all well and good, but I think what we're trying to nail down here, Joshy, is are we in the minority? Does everyone else out there think that when they purchase someone a drink, they expect it in return? That's what I want to know. Is if most people out there think, if I buy someone a drink,
yes.
I see Gabe Neitzel at the bar and I buy him a drink, I'm expecting Gabe Neitzel, not because Gabe's a nice guy and he does the right thing, but because this is just standard operating procedure for interactions.
Take the recognition out of it, though. Say, oh, you went to Horicon High School. I did too 10 years earlier. I buy you a drink. The people think that then you should buy the person to drink back.
Again, the reason why I think it's the right thing to do for me is because, like, oh, you recognize me. You're a fan of the show. I want to show my appreciation that you've dedicated your time to watch on YouTube, listen on the radio, however you consume the show. So I want to say thank you as well for being a fan of the show.
It's so nice of you to say thank you. I always say, I'm sorry. Is that not the right thing to say when someone says that they listen to the show? I always say, I'm sorry.
You want to grow the fan base? What are we doing over here?
I just want them
just
to know
warn them.
That I know what they are putting themselves through when they listen to the show regularly. I don't think there's any obligation. I also think that alcohol is a really like tricky space in our society. I don't know how many drinks that guy has had. I don't know what their situation is. You know what I mean? Like, it's so there's a part of me that is a little hesitant to contribute to them drinking, whether it's prompted or unprompted. Like, I get a little bit uncomfortable in that space, just drinking in general. Because let's be honest, our society has a complicated relationship with alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the obligation of the bar, though. The bartenders, that's why they go to school for
it. But
I'm
saying, so now if I bought them a drink, now I've taken the bartender out of it. Because now they are getting a drink, and who knows how many of those exchanges or interactions are occurring. You know what I'm saying? The bartender is supposed to be keeping tabs, quote unquote, on how much that person is drinking. But now they're getting beers from the people they're buying drinks for. Makes it a little tougher, doesn't it?
I just don't think you have to assume the responsibility there.
I know. It just, again, sometimes it makes me uncomfortable. Just alcohol in general. Just throwing that out there.
You're one day removed, okay? Talk to us next week, okay? One day removed from sleeping on the floor with the spins. I hate alcohol.
I'm never drinking again. Don't buy me a drink. I'm not buying you a drink. I don't even want to hear the word drink. It's a fair point by you, Chu.
How was that workout yesterday?
So hard. Oof, my legs
sweat it out.
On fire. Yes, absolutely. People wouldn't stand
Start
next to
get
me.
A little lightheaded after
I
a little
did.
Bit.
I was like, I'm seeing spots, folks. I'm seeing spots. That'll happen when you sleep on the floor the night before. My kids were funny. My daughter goes, I heard you slept on the floor. She's six. I go, where'd you hear that? She goes, on the radio. I go, you're listening to the radio? Yeah, Dad had it on the way to school. I was like, oh, I got to remember that window between 7:35.
Who told you that? Well, you I guess technically you did, Mom.
Let's go out to the phone line. Scott in Greendale is waiting patiently on the line. Good morning, Scott. You're on with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Hello. So after college, I was sitting at a bar with a buddy of mine, and the bartender comes up and said, hey, those two girls down at the end of the bar would like to buy you guys a shot. So being nice, and I didn't want to order something too expensive, we just got shots of Fireball. And then I said, okay, go get them one too. So she goes back and pours them a shot. She comes back with a big grin on her face and said, they ordered Patron on you.
Oh.
I ended up having to pay them $30 because of their two shots when I was being respectful. So I don't return anymore because of that.
That's just a rookie move, Scott. You buy them the shot and they can take it or leave it. It's that's the option to go there.
But it is
I got hosed. I was
being nice. You did get hosed. Yes, they set a trap, and unfortunately, you fell into it.
Yeah.
800-990-3776. Let's see. Lots of reaction rolling in on this one. Chef Ed weighing in saying, I've bought a bunch of drinks for ESPN folks. I have never expected to get one in return. Chris weighing in and saying, never would expect one of you to buy me a drink in return. I would actually feel a little bad if you bought me a drink. Gabe should be able to expense those drinks if he is buying them for fans of the show. That's from Ashton in Sheboygan. And then Kevin weighing in saying, as the kind of fan who would absolutely go up to Gabe or Joshy at a bar and buy them a drink just for the opportunity to chat for 5 minutes, the drink is the cost of their attention. It requires no payback. If the conversation is good enough that you want to continue and reciprocate, I would be obliged the same 5 minutes you gave me. That makes sense. Fair. I kind of understand that. I'll buy you a drink. We're going to chit-chat here while we enjoy our beverages. Then we're going to cling and go our separate ways. Kind of like it.
Yeah, I think that's most people's expectations in that scenario.
I assume you're putting this on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter poll. Are you obligated? What's the verbiage?
It is out there. Let me pull it up. Sorry, I just lost it.
I've got it right here. If someone buys you a drink while you are out, are you obligated to buy that person a drink as well? Yes, got to do it. No, not part of the deal.
All right, go ahead and weigh in on that. We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Roll on after this. Before we do that, guys, tune into the Behind the Bucks on the Bucks Plus Audio Network. It's presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and H&R and benefits consultant. Behind the Bucks dives deep into Bucks and Six, a culture unknowingly created by former Bucks star Brandon Jennings. Take a look inside the Brandon Jennings story, the origin of Bucks and Six, how it became the rallying cry, and what it truly means to Jennings and the Bucks fans alike. Find Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Behind the Bucks is presented by our friends at Gallagher.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I'm going to go with the corn dog, the old corn dog. The corn dog for the
pierogies birthday. And borscht all day long.
That's just crazy. Nobody likes borscht, let alone
God,
on their
it's
birthday.
So good. It's the only thing that makes my mouth water, other than my wife.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Just trying too hard when really it's closer than it is too far.
Sophia Minner coming up in just a few minutes here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Lots to discuss with her about the Brew Crew and the series they are currently in with the Chicago Cubs. Chicago got the win last night, so they are even, one apiece as the series rolls on. I want to talk about the Green Bay Packers wide receiver situation. There's a lot of ways that we can take this. I believe that Matt Schneidman, who writes for The Athletic and covers the Green Bay Packers, had a mailbag recently that talked about who he thinks will lead the team from a reception standpoint, from a receiver standpoint, from a pass-catching standpoint. And he was kind of all over the place, actually. He said that Watson will lead in yards, Dobbs will lead in touchdowns, Reed and Wicks are likely to be the most talented on the team. There's no question that the Green Bay Packers have a ton of talent at this position. But of course, we have debated here and elsewhere whether or not they need a bona fide wide receiver number one, or if they need one of the guys who are currently on the roster to elevate himself to that spot. So first things first, Chew. Do you think there will be a 1,000-yard wide receiver on the Green Bay Packers this year, remembering that Jaden Reed had 793 last year, Dobbs had 674, Wicks had 581?
I would say Reed, but because there's so many of them, I would say no. He'll probably come close. I'm not bought into Watson yet with the hamstring as far as playing most of the games, but I think Wicks, right now I think Dobbs is what he is. You know, I don't know if he's going to get any better. I don't see him evolving into a one, but I think he's a pretty good two. I still think Wicks and Reed could develop into ones, because right now they all feel like twos.
Sure.
So, which is a nice thing to have.
Yards, right? Like,
no,
because you got Kraft, you got Musgrave in there
so
too.
So many, yeah. There's so many weapons.
Too many people.
Which is better? I think it's better. I'd rather have a five-headed monster instead of a two-headed monster.
I agree that it's better. I always think that if you have the number one guy, while they can be a difference maker, it's a lot easier to defend, unless you have somebody who is just indefensible, right? The way that you win, I think, at the position is very simple. You either have a game-changer, generational player who cannot be stopped by an opposing defense, or you have a third wide receiver who is better than their third defensive back and can beat them every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that to me feels like an easy recipe. And I think that quarterbacks are too conditioned to get locked on a number one wide receiver. We saw it with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, Gabe.
I think that's just an unfair narrative that happened with those two because of the one play where Alan Lazard was running wide open at the end of the 49ers game. But it was clear that they were, I mean, in that game as well, they threw the ball and completed 10-plus passes to Aaron Jones. You take a look at what the Chiefs did last year. You take a look at what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did the year that they won. These teams have a few guys that they trust. I think it's tough to keep this many guys happy as it goes along. And also, additionally, this is something that's super rare. Because, I mean, the Packers have all this talent. They're not paying any of it. In a couple of years, you're going to have to decide who you're paying. And you're not going to be able to have this depth of talent.
Mm-mm.
So eventually you have to evolve on to where the Kansas City Chiefs were last year, where they clearly had three guys that they really trusted in the playoffs. Yes, other guys made plays. But watching those games, looking at the box scores, it's very obvious that Isaiah Pacheco, Travis Kelce, and Rashee Rice were the three guys that they trusted. And they got the ball and fed them the ball early, often, consistently. And that's how they got to a Super Bowl. Like, the Packers are going to have to do that eventually
as well.
Well,
and to your point about that, we were talking a little bit about T. Higgins during the break and how everybody wants to point to T. Higgins versus Jordan Love in that draft class and how T. Higgins is sitting out right now because the Bengals have to decide if they're paying Ja'Marr Chase or T. Higgins. Higgins wants to be paid. Ja'Marr Chase is obviously the priority. Could the Packers find themselves in a comparable situation in a few years with a couple of these guys, Gabe?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you're not going to be able to keep all four. You're not. Well, let's... We keep saying four. It's realistically six because the two tight ends. But you're not going to be able to keep all of them. Probably, if you're lucky, you'll be able to keep half. If you're lucky, you'll be able to keep three of the six. Two wide receivers and a tight end.
LaFleur's biggest challenge will be managing the egos.
Yeah.
Because you have, let's just say, seven guys you had to get the ball to. I mean, there were times, and Holmgren did a great job at it. There were times Keith would have like seven catches and not have one. And you don't... You want to hide the fact that you're bent inside, but they know it. And then he'd always take care of you. He'd level it out. But that's going to be the biggest challenge because if you look at Watson, this is a huge year for him. And ultimately, you know, guys want to win, but they also want to get paid. And when it comes closer to that contract, guys want the ball more. That's why I'll be very interested in Watson because this is a big year for him. If he plays 10 games, he ain't coming back. He ain't coming back. You can't trust him. You cannot pay a guy $18 million a year to play 10 games.
But so that's the tricky part, though, Chew, because we have this conversation around Jordan Love where it's, you know, oh, 9 games. Do you pay him that much after 9 games? If Christian Watson, let's say, plays 16 of the 17 games this year,
yes,
and he does go up over 1,000 yards, and a lot of times when you're entering that final year of the contract, that's when the contract
then
negotiations start.
Time. Yes. Yes.
Can you still trust him based on the fact that, okay, he played 16 games in year three, but the first two, he only, you know, you missed 10 games in those first two seasons, not to mention some of the games where you played and were unable to finish.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this also, guys, because last year Jordan Love threw just over 4,000 yards, passing yards, okay? Had a couple of games that were real crappy. I think he had like one game where he had like 115 passing yards. So let's assume that he doesn't have a clunker like that. Let's say he gets up to 4,500 passing yards this year. If you have a 1,000-yard receiver, 1,000 of those are dedicated to whomever. I pick a person. I don't even care which one it is. So now you've got 3,500 passing yards to spread around to you, to your point, Gabe, five or six other guys. That's not even to, I don't even know if they're going to use Josh Jacobs out of the backfield at all, if he's going to be catching passes,
they
but
will.
He probably mm-hmm. will. So like, what are guys then averaging out? To me, that scenario reminds me of 2021 when Aaron Rodgers had Devontae Adams, who I think had a 1,500 yard season. And then everybody else was like 3, 5, 98. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that to me was a success in that season, but that requires somebody of Devontae Adams' ilk to get 1,500 yards. Is there enough to the point that we were making, balls to go around if somebody does end up eclipsing that 1,000-yard mark?
I think so, and I can just speak for the tight ends back in the day, and obviously it was a different game. We ran the ball a little more. Holmgren would say between me and Keith, he wants between 75 and 85 catches, just dedicated to the tight ends. And I'm sure there's a formula for Z. There's one for X. Your Zs are always going to get the most ball. Your Devontae's, your Donald Drivers, the Z position. And then it goes to X, and then it goes to the tight end.
Who's the Z?
I mean, I'm saying Reed. Saying Reed, your X is more of a speed guy.
Okay.
And that's where I'm putting Watson. And then you just have to see which ones emerge, because they're all like, they're all jammed. It's like NASCAR. They're all jammed up. Someone eventually has to get out in front and be the third down guy. You know, I'm not saying you have to be as good as Devontae in your second year, mm-hmm. but someone's got to start trending that way, or you just have a bunch of twos. You know what I'm saying? I would say it's between Reed and Wicks. I kind of know agree. what Dobbs is.
I would agree.
You know?
But that's also the safe guess, because those are the two guys that led the team last year, 793 and 674.
As rookies, yeah. Right? Which is pretty impressive.
Dobbs had 674.
But Dobbs I see as a zebra.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jaden Reed, 793. Dobbs had 674. Yeah. And who did you say? Wicks?
Wicks had 581.
81.
So, but Wicks came on kind of late.
Yeah, I mean, he
didn't come on as quick as Reed.
He didn't play really much the first couple
yeah.
games. I'm looking here at Mike Clay's projections for 2024. He has Jordan Love with 3,600 passing yards and 325
Ooh.
Completions.
Is the assumption there that they're just going to be running the ball significantly more?
For some reason, Sean Clifford has 464. So it's,
I mean, my guess is factoring in for a game or two of injuries.
Yes,
something.
Yeah. So right now we have the tight ends with 76 receptions between them. Tucker Kraft, 38, and Luke Musgrave, 34. That probably needs to be adjusted with the pec injury.
Right.
But the leader in receiver is Christian Watson, followed by Jaden Reed, Romeo Dobbs, and then Dontavian Wicks. In terms of catches, they all have them. The first three are around 55 to 60, depending on it. They have Jaden Reed with a few more because of the special catches he can get. And then Dontavian Wicks is all the way down at 36.
But he had 39 last year.
Yeah.
So it's a comparable performance. What do they have for yards for Wicks, is he estimating?
427.
So slightly lower.
What does a real good number two make?
Money-wise?
15, 16, 17 million a year?
I mean, what's his name in Jacksonville? Christian Kirk.
Christian Kirk.
He got $20 million, and then people match that. So
as a two?
Yes.
Yeah, but wasn't there something funny about his deal? Oh, no. Christian Kirk was a comp. Was that for Devontae? Was that the Christian Kirk thing that's popping for me, Gabe? At one point, did somebody say that?
No, I don't think so. That was just what the market changed to last year.
Yeah.
Basically, if you're not the number one guy, you're getting around $20 million a year. Which I would
you
assume
can't
climbed.
Pay four of them. You can't pay
Correct.
Four guys,
that, again, that's why
dollars.
You've got. That's why I said. Yeah. Luckily, if you're lucky, you'll be able to keep three of the six.
Yeah.
When it comes time in
and
three
one
years.
Of the tight ends.
That's what I'm saying.
If yeah.
two wide receivers, one of the tight ends.
Yeah, I agree.
Three
According
of the six.
To Rodgers, the Packers offered Adams a contract with less money than what Christian Kirk received, which infuriated Adams. I knew there was some connection there. My brain was making the Kerry Matheson pushpin string connections. We got to get to Sophia a minute. We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Talking baseball, talking the Brew Crew right after this.
From the latest happenings on the diamond.
They've obviously taken their hits at times, but I think Freddie Peralta has been so steady. Colin Ray, same thing.
To all the insight and expertise on things outside the ballpark.
And he does it so unorthodox. Like, he'll change his batting stance, like within an at-bat or at-bat to at-bat. Like, it's insane. Like, it defies kind of everything that you hear from players.
We only turn to one person. Batter Up. It's Sophia Minert on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Brought to you by Century Foods. Win the ultimate baseball fan experience at Century Foods. Return the entry form found in the weekly ad to any Century by July 24th. Century Foods, the best meat in town. Also brought to you by Two Men in a Junk Truck. From unwanted furniture to full-service residential and commercial cleanouts, go to twomeninajunktruck.com to book your free, no-obligation, same-day estimate.
Brewers dropped the game last night against the Cubs 6-3. Quite a game, actually, for quite a while. It was a 1-0 game until the ninth, and the Brewers tied it up, made it 1-1, and then, unfortunately, the wheels fell off in the 10th inning. But, Sophia, it sounds like the Brewers avoided a pretty significant injury.
Yeah, they did. Trevor McGill came on for that 10th inning, and first batter, he takes that line drive pretty much flush right off the elbow, forearm area. Very concerning just the way he reacted. And, you know, the arm dropped and the glove dropped and just had to walk off the field right away with the training staff. But no fractures for him. So the good news there, it seems like they avoided a pretty major injury, which is the last thing they need, considering all of the injuries to their pitching staff right now. So we didn't get a chance to talk to Trevor after the game. Pat Murphy shared that news with us. Trevor was getting treatment, and he said he'll talk to us today. So we'll get kind of more information on what his timeline will be.
Sophia, do you notice a little extra juice from the players trying to stick it to the role boss? I remember when Holmgren left us in 98. I mean, we still loved him, but we were not very happy that he left. And I remember when we did face him again, we really wanted to give it to him. Do you notice that from the players at all?
Honestly, no. I'm not lying to you. They don't have any ill will towards Craig at all. And they also have really good relationships with him. When we saw him at spring training, when we saw him in Chicago, even the last 2 days, I think they were probably surprised by the reaction that he got. How unanimous that reaction was, I think, was maybe the surprising part. But there's no ill will. I think they understand the decision that Craig made. And also, I think it's a reflection of, like, how much they feel about Murph, too. They're really happy with how things have gone with Murph and the relationship that they have with him, how that transition has gone, considering what a significant change that is. But I think, look, they want to win the games, no doubt. These are really important series. These are big games. The environments are always really fun, whether they're at Wrigley or here at home. So, yeah, I think it's for them, it's just like, let's go out and win the games.
Is that part of also because it just seems like baseball is such a small community, everybody knows everybody. Like, actual mm-hmm. ill will seems like it just comes very few and far between for any team versus any team at this point, whereas fans obviously have those rivalries and the teams they want to beat more than the others.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think, like, the ill will is from the fans. It's not anything internal. And so I think, like, I think maybe it's the everyday nature of baseball. Maybe it's, you know, just the movement within the league. And even just you think about, like, to your point about, you know, football, it's like maybe the rivalries are more intense because it's, you know, it's one game a week and you play fewer times. But, like, you think about before the balanced schedule, like, you would play the Cubs 20 times, you know, now it's mm-hmm. 12 or 13. And not that competition is dissipated at all, but, like, you see these people a lot. And so I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's just different within baseball, but no doubt, like, they want to win. Like, to be very clear, they want to win these games. They want to win these series. It's not a, like, to get you back at Craig. It's just because they're at the top of the division. They see an opportunity to add to their division lead. And I think because we have fewer division series, there is more importance on these series, whether it's April, May, or September. After this, they'll only see the Cubs two more times the rest of the year. So this is your best opportunity to create separation.
talking with Sophia Minard about the Milwaukee Brewers. And Sophia, I saw that article that Buster Olney put out. We actually talked about it here on the radio about Josh Hader basically establishing when he was going to pitch. He had his own, he was dictating his usage a few years ago. And I started to wonder if at all that played a role in Craig Counsell's decision to leave the Milwaukee Brewers. Essentially, I have one of the best closers in the game, and I can't even use him the way I want to, even though Hader was flexible at times with when he would pitch extra innings. Do you think that reality and kind of, again, what Milwaukee can do versus some other teams played at all in Craig's decision to leave?
I don't think the Hader situation specifically, no, because I think we all understood what that situation was, and Craig spoke in that article with Buster Olney, and you know, he shared his perspective of, like, he really didn't feel compromised with that situation, and I think he understood it from Josh's perspective, because at the end of the day, what's best for the team is for Josh Hader to be available as much as possible. And so as a manager, that's the best outcome for you, right? Is to be able to go to your closer as often as possible. And that's what it was really about, was keeping Josh healthy. That was the bottom line, was keeping Josh healthy, keeping him available, and allowing him to perform at an elite level. And you can argue, you know, right or wrong or whatever, but the reality is it worked. He was never on the injured list in his time with Milwaukee. He avoided injury. He was available. He took the ball. He did his job. And I thought Craig shared his perspective really fairly in that article. And I think Craig's decision was never about one thing. So I think, you know, it's, to me, I don't think that was a huge factor.
Is that common in baseball, Sophia? Agents dictating how a player is to be used?
No. And I think that's why, you know, the story got the attention that it did, was because that situation was so unique and something that really had never been done before. But I think the other side of that is Josh Hader is kind of a unicorn in this game. There aren't pitchers and there aren't relievers like him that have been as dominant as him. So I think, you know, again, the agent and Josh, they shared their side of that. They saw it as an opportunity for leverage, and it was unusual. You know, if you haven't really heard of that. And I think this was the first time that they had addressed that publicly and explained kind of what their stance was.
But the bottom line there was that he wasn't going to get a long-term deal with Milwaukee. And he was basically waiting until he did get the long-term deal, which he eventually got with Houston. So that, to mm-hmm. me, is the circumstance that we cannot ignore, which is that Milwaukee mm-hmm. was never going to be able to give him the long-term deal, which is part of the reason why this unprecedented situation developed.
Yeah. And I think it was, I think it was also a reflection of, you know, how the arbitration process went, which was another thing that they addressed in the article, was kind of that system and how that affects players.
Not only was obviously the McGill thing tough yesterday, but also DL Hall. What's the latest with his knee? Because that seemed like that was funky. That happened during a rehab assignment.
Yeah, he had gone to Wisconsin and did an inning with the Timber Rattlers. Then he went to Nashville, did an inning there, and then basically suffered the injury again. Like, just his toe dragged and got the cleat caught up under him. And so he re-aggravated that knee injury, which is incredibly frustrating for him. So he's back with the team now. He had an MRI done. I believe the team doctors have reviewed it. He's now waiting on a second opinion from Dr. Neil Elitrosh, who's an orthopedic specialist in LA. So he's hoping he can get an answer on that within the next day or two. You know, from what the Brewers doctors have said, they're optimistic about, you know, it's not worse. So he's just waiting on a second opinion. So it might derail his progress a little bit, which is unfortunate for him. But when he gets cleared, he's still been throwing because he wants to keep his arm active. He just needs to get this knee situation resolved. And then hopefully he can start back up with his throwing program, get back on the rehab assignment. And it sounds like they will not build him up as a starter on that rehab assignment. They'd likely build him up to a multi-inning appearance or two, and then have him rejoin the team, most likely out of the bullpen.
Sophia, what's Willy Adames' mental space like right now? I think he's had like three home runs robbed by center fielders or by outfielders. Yesterday, he gets thrown out at second base trying to stretch that hit into a double. He thought he was safe. He was, you know, immediately telling Pat Murphy, go to the review, check it out. They ended up losing that review. How's he doing with all of these things that seem to be a little unlucky and snake bitten?
Yeah, poor Willie. I mean, he really has. It feels like he could have twice as many homers as what he has right now. And he, after Bellinger robbed him last night, he came in and he looked at me and he just held up the number three, because this was something that we had talked about on the road trip. He'd been robbed in Houston as well. And he's just like, man, like, you know, you work so hard and those are like such tough at bats, and then to get robbed like that is just like so frustrating. And he was just, he had kind of been scuffling on the road trip prior to the Miami series. And so, you know, Pat Murphy actually had a good one-on-one meeting with him, just sort of kind of building him back up. Right. Because, you know, Willy Adames, for as much, you know, energy and just fire and emotion that he brings to this team, he's like the igniter of this team. He's human, right? Like, he wears frustrations. He wears it when he's not getting results. And so they had a good conversation and, you know, just Willy is just sticking with it. And he finally got some good results, was actually riding a 6-game hitting streak going into yesterday. But that's, I think it's just baseball. You know, sometimes you get unlucky things that happen. He kind of got the luck to turn in the last couple games of the road trip, finally got some hits to fall. He was elated to see that happen in Miami. So yeah, it's, baseball will do that to you. It will bring you up and it will bring you down. And, you know, Willie does a great job of just sort of staying consistent and sticking to it.
Lost in the shuffle, of course, was Freddy Peralta's performance as he had 11 strikeouts. Bryce Wilson on the hill tonight as the series continues against the Chicago Cubs. Sophia, we appreciate your insight. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
If you love sports betting, you got to make your way to the sports book at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel, Milwaukee. It has everything a sports fanatic could ever want and more. That 2,000 square foot video wall, that's going to draw your attention right away. But so will the aromas coming out of their new kitchen, their new restaurant called The Kitchen, rather. They've got the self-service betting kiosk. They've got seating for over 200 people, a broadcast booth where you'll see Jen, Gabe, and Chewy and other shows originating from, and a first-class bar. They also have free parking. So if you just want to run in and run out, you've got those 20-minute reserved parking spaces near the Skywalk. They have figured it all out. It is a new era of sports betting at Pottawatomie. So get in on the action.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
363. What's that?
Oh, the number of yards they gave up on the ground against the Philadelphia Eagles.
It's a Bible verse. John 3:63. Look it up. Tell us what it says.
I thought it was Joe 3:63, and it was, thou shalt not get past me on the line of scrimmage.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Here we go.
Have passed since we first broached the topic of the stolen pizza oven. Have we gotten any closer to figuring out who brought the thing back, Joshy?
We have not. I did find out that said pizza oven could be purchased at some local, rather big box stores.
Okay.
So there is a potential that it was stolen, used, and then replaced by somebody who realized they could get themselves in some big trouble.
How long was it gone?
2 weeks.
Yeah,
2 weeks.
I went and bought another one.
Well, because Gabe
that
was
would somehow,
blown away.
Yeah, that would somehow make more sense. Because, again, if you're stealing a pizza oven and not even opening it
probably
for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
My guess is
plugging that sucker in that night.
Fire it up. Let's go.
To have some za.
Did we ask earlier, is this a fireable offense? Like, today we're going to find out. Somebody's going to find out. Maybe not us, because they don't let us in on these type of top secret details.
Well, if we get an email that so-and-so is
has been fired,
is no longer a teammate at Good Karma Brands, I
love those.
We might be able to figure that one out.
There's a wish you well, and there's, he's gone. Stick a fork in him.
Don't let him in the door. Yeah.
They code that really well.
Chew, would you fire? Are you firing?
No. He brought it back.
Did they, though?
Or replaced it, either way.
Replaced it.
What's more likely, that it was done maliciously, or that it was a mistake and a misunderstanding.
Malicious.
You guys have no. This is crazy to me, Gabe. Nice guy Gabe over here just like throw the
it's
book at him.
It's behind a locked door. You know what, Jen? I walked into your house last night. I know the door was locked. Happened to know the code. You know, I took a couple things out of your kitchen. I really thought I could just take them home for myself.
Yeah, but you're my pal. That'd be fine.
No, it would not be fine.
Just bring
them
back.
I'm telling you, it would be. Just you, though. Not anyone else. I don't want people out there thinking this is an open invitation to pilfer things from my house. Just you.
Like, it's just, it doesn't, if something's behind a locked door, unless that door belongs to you or you're renting the space on the other side of that door, whatever's on the other side of that door does not belong to you.
I mean, this is so simple. If it's not yours, don't take it. And it's a very basic rule that we all are expected to live by. That rule was not lived by.
Again, if this pizza oven had been left sitting out on the counter it currently is in our kitchen here, or on the ping pong table by the door where you walk out, and somebody thought, oh, this pizza oven's here because things are left there that you can take on a regular basis, more understandable. This being in a place that only certain people know even where it is, or that it's behind a locked door, it doesn't, it's not just an honest mistake.
Is there a monetary amount? Because we said we can excuse a koozie, or we can excuse a t-shirt, mm-hmm. or a bag, or some of the other things we give away as swag at some of our outings. Is there a monetary amount that puts this in the absolutely not, why in the world would you take that category?
Anything over
$30?
$30?
Sweatshirt
50
fine.
Bucks?
Keep going. I'm going to see if that thing's open today.
You had to swing by. If it's free, it's for me. If someone buys you a drink while you're out, are you obligated to buy that person a drink as well? 58% of people saying yes, you got to do it. 41% of people saying no, it's not part of the deal. Matt weighing in saying, this is a male versus female difference on this one. A male answer is yes, in my opinion, but a female does not need to, as there is this whole guys trying to pick you up element. Aaron weighing in saying, if you're both buying each other a drink, what's the point? Just buy your own drinks then. You buy, hey, listen, let's cut out the middle. You buy yours, I'll buy mine.
For people like Gabe and I who have engaged in this a lot, it's simply who has to go up and get it and fight the line. So you each sacrifice some of your time to grab the table of beer, and then the next time it's someone else's turn.
All right, fair enough. I can appreciate that. Will D and Tosh is next on ESPN Milwaukee. Have a great one, everybody.